Hey everyone, this is Achyuta Bhava from Nightlight Astrology, and today we are going to talk about Venus's opposition with Uranus. Now, Venus is currently in the sign of Scorpio, which is the sign of Venus's exile, and moving through an opposition with Uranus in the sign of Taurus. This is perfecting today, September 22nd, through tomorrow, September 23rd. So we're going to talk about this today. Number of things. We're going to take a look at the Tao Te Ching, a little bit of the I Ching. We're going to take a look at a text from Manilius, who was a Roman poet who wrote a textbook on astrology. Bunch of things to bring in today that should help us with this transit. Before I dive into that, I want to remind all of you, I am in the midst of promoting my upcoming program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic. It starts November 13th, meets on Saturdays. I hope to see some of you in class soon. You can check it out on the courses page of my website, nightlightastrology.com. Click on the first year course page and get all the information you need about the program. It's a 1 year immersive study in Hellenistic astrology. And it's a great class. You can save by using the early bird payment, save $500 off. There's a payment plan if you need it, and also need-based tuition for people who might need some help. Please be sure to ask any questions you have about the program. I've been talking about it daily for a while now, I've kind of gone over the basics quite often. I'll probably dive into it a little bit more in depth tomorrow. And later this week, I actually have a former student coming in who I will interview as well. But it's 30 classes on the year, 12 guest lectures, breakout study sessions, a ton of extra bonus content, guided reading assignments and quizzes if you want to take them. All sorts of stuff to help you develop a practice if that's what you're looking for. Otherwise, if you're someone who's just looking to deepen your own studies because you love astrology, the program is really there to give you as much or as little as you're looking for individually. You can attend the live webinars or you can follow along at your own pace. So any questions, email us info@nightlightastrology.com. Otherwise, again, check out the course page at my website, nightlightastrology.com. So thank you guys for listening, and let's take a look at the real-time clock and get a sense for what is happening with Venus and Uranus today. Then we're going to dive in. Lots of good stuff to come. I'm also very excited to announce that after I'm finished with my Misconceptions of the Zodiac series, which some of you guys may have been watching already, I will be doing a series like I did a few years ago. I did a series on the Hermetica, and I used the Tartar Cornerstone Edition version of the Hermetica. And in a couple of weeks after, maybe about a month after I finished my Misconceptions of the Zodiac, I'll actually going to be starting a new series on the Tao Te Ching. We're going to be working through the Tao Te Ching together slowly, probably a couple verses at a time. That'll be a longer series, but a lot of people who watch my channel know that I refer to the I Ching and Taoist philosophy here and there. I think that Taoism has a lot in common with Stoicism, and both were around during the earliest, the dawn of Hellenistic horoscopic astrology. So something that will be fun to look into eventually. And for those of you who've been asking me to do something on the Tao Te Ching for a couple of years now, I'm excited to announce that I'll be doing that. So stay tuned for more on that. In the meantime, let's take a look at this transit. Here's Venus opposing Uranus. And you can see Venus at 13 Scorpio right now. Uranus is at about 14 Taurus. We're also going to see the sun pass through the gateway of the equinox, the autumn equinox here in the Northern Hemisphere, the zero Libra degree, big moment of the solar year. And one of the things that we're going to notice is that as that's happening, it's a big moment in the year. You've got the look at what's happening simultaneously. Here's the sun passing through the autumn equinox. Here's Venus opposing Uranus. And as we talked about yesterday, here's Mercury squaring Pluto, which is also present today. So a lot of big stuff going on. Here's September 22nd, 23rd for Venus opposite Uranus, for Mercury square Pluto, for the autumn equinox. And then next week, of course, we're going to have Mercury turning retrograde and going back through the square with Pluto. We'll do our October summary and horoscopes for October. So lots to look forward to. In the meantime, we're going to talk about Venus opposite Uranus today. Remember that Venus is in the sign of Scorpio. And anytime that you put Venus in a Mars sign or Mars in a Venus sign, planets are said to be in their detriment or exile. Retorius called them planetary contrarieties. It's one of the English translations of his, the way that he titles a section of his textbook, Planetary Contrarities. These are the, when you take a planet and put it into the sign opposite to its own, there's something of an archetypal opposite and an opposite or an oppositional tension built into opposite signs of the zodiac. The Mercury signs oppose the Jupiter signs. The Sun and the Moon oppose Saturn's signs. Venus opposes Mars and Mars opposes Venus's signs. So you can learn a lot by meditating on planetary relationships and how different planets get along with one another. So when Venus right now, we have to remember that Venus is in the sign of Mars, which means that there can be conflict or discord or challenges relative to topics like love, relationships, friendship, beauty, art, agreement, and so forth. A little bit more tension in the air when Venus is in Scorpio in terms of trying to get things done or come to an agreement. You know, it's like two best friends in a fight. It's like you're best friends, but you're in a fight. Or it's like lovers trying to work something out that, you know, it's like the bond is probably not going to be broken, but there may be some hurt feelings. Okay, so with Venus opposing Uranus, remember Uranus is the eccentric, rebel, wayward, the restless, the dissident. These are all words that I remember quite vividly from Richard Tarnas's descriptions in his book, Cosmos and Psyche, by the way, which is a great book if you ever want to read a good book on, kind of mundane astrology and archetypes. Anyway, when you pair rebellious, innovative, original, but disruptive Uranus with Venus, you get the unusual and the eccentric and the beautiful combining. You get freedom and sex. You get sudden disruptions of things that are supposed to be agreeable or pleasant. You get sudden misfortune because Venus is good fortune in ancient astrology. And so the sudden shifting or disruption of something that is supposed to be good. Remember, Venus is a little debilitated right now. So the sudden disruption of something where there's supposed to be agreement or beauty or something that makes you feel good. And then suddenly it's sort of disrupted or broken. If you think about things that are iconoclastic, like taking something beautiful and smashing it. If you think about breaking with trends and fads and fashion and doing something original, but shocking or provocative. If you think about the sudden way in which your desires or your wants or what you like or don't like change. Every night when my daughter goes to sleep, we'll sit down and we do this little game where we play the three planets game. And, I usually read, we're still working our way through the Narnia series. We're reading The Horse and His Boy right now. And I've got a new Narnia poster, by the way, coming from my back door there. Really excited about that. They're going to make me one. Anyway, so we sit there and we play this three planets game. And one of the things that happens is, she gets to name any of the planets and she's memorizing them. And then I'll tell her three interesting things about the planets and she loves this. So, last night we were talking about Venus and she said Venus. And I was like, I've said so much about Venus already, but I thought, this one, not a lot of people think of. And I said, Gigi, what do you really find beautiful, right? What is the most beautiful thing ever? And she said something about, nature, being outside, the sunny weather, something like that. And in fact, Venus was associated with fair and pleasant weather. But I said, okay, so what do you find ugly? And she mentioned a particular character in a little I forget what the show is called. It's like a little show that she watches, and there's a character who's like a bad guy. That was her ugly. And I said, for Venus, our sense of what is beautiful is very closely connected to what we also don't like. And so we talked about things that we're attracted to and things that we're repulsed by, and to connect them together is really interesting. And I said, everyone has different things that they really like and everything. Lots of people have things that they don't like. And so we were talking about likes and dislikes. Well, if you have a sudden radical shift in what you find attractive and what you find unattractive, that is the kind of thing that happens during a Uranus-Venus transit. Often enough, you're going to see that, when Uranus transits Venus in your birth chart, but even a brief transit like the one we're dealing with right now, you could see something like that occur in your life. The landscape of desire and aversion suddenly changes. Breakthroughs in relationships These are actually great. I love Venus Uranus dynamics for people who are stuck in a rut or who need, and if two people in a relationship are committed to each other and committed to doing work together, you know, really getting in there, and then the Venus Uranus dynamic comes along. And sometimes it's like, look, I need to be free. I need to be myself. I need to go experiment. I need to, you know, individuate sexually or relationally, or I'm just wanting to date many people or go and experiment. Okay, that's Venus Uranus. But for people who are in committed relationships, although Venus Uranus can bring the sudden unexpected breakup, it can also bring the sudden unexpected breakthrough, almost like the relationship goes through a random mutation and it happens really rapidly and unexpectedly. So those are wonderful. In fact, you know, I feel like my wife and I leveled up this week, and it happened. I'd say, I don't know, I feel like we have level ups, like, you know, every couple of months or something. It's like all of a sudden we'll be talking and something will really click and we'll be like, yeah, wow. And then like, it just feels like we got a next level medal or so or something in like our marriage, you know? So anyway, breakthroughs in relationships are part of Venus Uranus as well. So look for those. So that's just some of the archetypal combinations, but here is something to consider. And I want to show you this by going back to the screen. Did you know that the houses associated with Mars and Venus in ancient astrology were called respectively the houses of good and bad fortune? So here, the fifth house, I'm going to highlight this. This is just archetypally, not necessarily anything to do with what you're seeing on the wheel here. Just the fifth house in a purely symbolic sense. In ancient astrology, the fifth house was called good fortune and the joy of Venus, whereas its neighboring house, the sixth, was called bad fortune and the joy of Mars. Now, I want to read you something that was written by a Roman poet named Manilius. Here is what he wrote about these two temples, the houses 5 and 6. Lay carefully in your mind the abode and the divinity and appellation of the nearby abode, so that hereafter the knowledge may be put to great use. Here largely abide the changes in our health and the warfare waged by the unseen weapons of disease, wherein are engaged the two powers of chance and Godhead, affecting this region of uncertainty on either side, now for better, now for worse. Might sound like a simple passage. If you know the context, you know Manilius. This is something I teach in my classes, by the way, if you like to geek out on this kind of stuff. What Manilius is saying is that there are these two houses, what they have in common is that in one house, things tend to decrease or decline, or you suffer misfortunes. And it feels like, what could I have done? There's a feeling of divine fate or intervention, as well as bad luck or bad chance that just comes to pass in your life and things happen. It's like that phrase. I think the first time I ever heard it was when I watched the movie Forrest Gump. He goes, "It happens. What? Shit. Shit happens." So that's the sixth house in a sense in the ancient world. There's a lot more to the sixth house than that, but in a very broad way, Mars was the lesser lesser malefic and an infortune, a planet that represented frustrations and difficulties that just come to us. Whereas Venus and the fifth house, the place of good fortune, generally speaking, represented good or pleasant or pleasing or happy or enjoyable things that just come to us. Now, it's interesting because there's a certain amount of this that's going to be fated. But Manilius is not someone who just purely believes in fate. Listen to what he says about how astrologers came to understand astrology in the first place. At the beginning of his text, he said, "Then priests who all their lives offered sacrifices in temples and were chosen to voice the people's prayers, secured by their devotion to the sympathy of God, their pure minds were kindled by the very presence of the powerful deity, and the God of heaven brought his servants to a knowledge of heaven and disclosed its secrets to them. These were the people who founded our noble science." So it's very interesting because what he describes here are people that show a certain amount of sympathy for the prayers and worries and concerns of everyday people, and who devote themselves to learning and to sacrificing sort of their blood, sweat, and tears to understanding the intelligence of the divine. And it's from this care and concern for the prayers and anxieties of others and through an attitude of selfless service and sacrifice that heaven and the gods disclose their secrets and this noble science to these individuals. What a beautiful passage, right? So here we have this idea that Manilius is giving us in the very beginning of that text, that through a kind of selfless sacrifice, through diminishing our own self-interest and caring about others, that good things are also bestowed or granted, or that we become blessed. So he's not saying, oh, everything's up to chance and, like, you know, shit happens and good shit happens and bad shit happens and, you know, it's all just sort of random. On one hand, he's saying, you know, life sometimes feels that way. But on the other hand, he's saying the astrologer is a person who sympathizes with the way that people can feel caught up in that cycle of alternating good and bad in the wheel of fortune. And if we dedicate ourselves to caring and serving people who are caught up in the spin cycle of gains and losses and the, you know, what turbulence exists in that spin cycle, right? If you dedicate yourselves to serving people who are there, and if you dedicate yourself to understanding why these changes exist in the first place, you'll be blessed with understanding. Understanding means that you, in a sense, even though you may experience the ups and downs of fate, that you suddenly have some insight that helps you to not only withstand those changes, but to help others withstand them. So there he's talking about really the appropriate use of free will in relation to the ups and downs of fortune. Why is this important? Because let's turn our attention now to back to Venus in Scorpio opposite Uranus. One of the things that can happen with Venus in Scorpio is you're taking Venus and you're putting it in a Mars-ruled sign, which essentially is like saying you're taking something that represents good fortune and you're putting it in a sign that can often bring strife and discord and bad fortune or misfortune. And so this, for a lot of people, when a debilitated Venus hits in opposition to Uranus, you're going to go through the spin cycle of good and bad fortune, right? How does that tend to show up? Well, it tends to show up in terms of things that you really want suddenly being interrupted and taken away from you, or things that you recognize that you have wanted but no longer are serving you and needing to get rid of them. But it's in its essence, Venus in Scorpio opposite Uranus can put us through the spin cycle of what we want and don't want, what is coming in that feels like a blessing and what's coming in that suddenly feels like a disruption or a challenge. And it can happen very suddenly, very rapidly with Venus and Uranus. So I did an I Ching reading this morning where we're going to dovetail with all of this. We're going to weave a bunch of things together here. And the I Ching reading was hexagram 42, a really interesting hexagram that really needs to be read alongside of the previous hexagram, number 41. Number 42 means to increase, like your wealth increasing or your status increasing, anything increasing. But there's a secret message to increase that's really, really beautiful. And it can't be understood unless you really understand the previous hexagram, number 41. So hexagram number 41 is decrease, and then hexagram 42 is increase, in the same way that the sixth house of bad fortune, Mars's house, is often associated with decrease or decline. In fact, there's a whole section in Manilius where he talks about the sixth house as a place of decline. And he talks about the fifth house, the place of good fortune, as a place of increase, a general way that people had in the ancient world of talking about what fortune and misfortune brought, increase and decrease. Generally speaking, that's one way that we classify fortunate versus unfortunate events. So in hexagram 41, decrease, we're seeing a picture in the I Ching of something being taken away due to someone or something else that we are dependent upon no longer being there for us. Okay. For example, if you take away alimony or child support, ouch, right? If you're reliant upon it, if you take away a form of government aid, if you take away your paycheck, if you take away your job, if you take away the food in your cupboards, if you take away a relationship, if you take away a child, if you take away a friend, suddenly there's a sense of something having been taken away from you, and your overall sense of well-being is immediately decreased. Okay. And it's a natural part of life. It's not necessarily evil. It just happens. In the same way that Mars is a planet that, whether you want to call it good or bad, the severing of cords and the cutting of bonds and the taking of things away from us just happens. It's a part of life. It's a part of the seasons of life. Well, then hexagram 42 means to increase something. But the secret of this hexagram is that we can only truly increase our self and our own situation by carefully looking at our resources and figuring out how to use them in order to support the well-being of others. So the secret of this, because remember, it comes right after the hexagram decrease, where someone or something that we rely on or depend upon for our well-being or happiness is taken away from us. In hexagram 42, how do we get back? How do we get back our happiness? Well, the message of this hexagram is not to go, you know, on a quest to get something back for myself. It says, instead, if you want to come back to increase, look at what you have and figure out how you can use what you have to benefit others. What an interesting teaching. If you want to get back to increase after losing something, figure out not so much how you can get something back for yourself that you've lost, but how you can give something that you have to other people and increase others. And that's the secret to returning to a sense of fulfillment after having lost someone or something. That's so profound, but it's not the only place that we see this. Listen to what the Tao Te Ching says in a few places. In verse 3, putting a value on status will cause people to compete. Hoarding treasure will turn them into thieves. Showing off possessions will disturb their daily lives. Thus, the sage rules by stilling minds and opening hearts, by filling bellies and strengthening bones. He shows people how to be simple and live without desires, to be content and not look for other ways. With the people so pure, who could trick them? What clever ideas could lead them astray? When action is pure and selfless, everything settles into its own perfect place. So here's the Tao Te Ching very specifically telling us that if you want people to feel fulfilled, strong, happy, content, your attitude is one that, look, I'm already full. I've already got this sense of happiness. How can I give something to other people? When you take that attitude, one, you find that you have something that's overflowing called generosity. It's an abundant, eternal resource that happens to be what you're actually made of. And then when you give it to other people, you find out that things naturally tend to fall into place. You create an ecology of happiness around you because you're giving to other people. And this settles everything into its right place. Listen to what in verse 5 the Tao Te Ching says. Heaven and earth have no preference. This is like good and bad fortune. A man may choose one over another, but to heaven and earth, all are the same. The high, the low, the great, the small, all are given light, all get a place to rest. The sage is like heaven and earth. To him, none are especially dear, nor is there anyone he disfavors. He gives and gives without condition, offering his treasure to everyone. The universe is like a bellows. It stays empty, yet is never exhausted. It gives out, yet always brings forth more. Man is not like this. When he blows out air like a bellows, he becomes exhausted. Man was not made to blow out air. He was made to sit quietly and find the truth within. Again, this idea that we have to shift our sense of, happiness. If our happiness is coming from unrenewable resources versus coming from renewable resources. And what are the symptoms of our happiness being dependent on the right renewable resource? Well, the first thing that the I Ching tells us, that the Tao Te Ching tells us, that Manilius implicitly tells us, is that when you're in the attitude of how can I serve, how can I help, not, you know, self-flagellating, whipping yourself on the back, starving yourself, depriving yourself in some way that's harmful, but when you have a spirit of generosity, a spirit of what do I have that I can use and give to other people gladly, that it is much less likely that your happiness is resting upon things and people and circumstances that the tides of fortune will eventually sweep away. There's no question that they'll eventually sweep them away. So if you want to keep good in your life for other people, the message in all of these places is that if you want the blessings of heaven, whether it's learning, you know, astrology or the benefits of spiritual life through meditation or prayer, or whether it's, having a healthy environment of people and spiritual community around you, then you have to break off unclean or unhealthy fuel sources, who or what we are dependent upon or who or what we give ourselves to constantly, and ask yourself, these are three questions that I wrote down. Does who and what I give my time, energy, and resources to, at least in some amount, contribute to heart, soul, compassion, tolerance, peace, mercy, friendship, beauty, justice, and love? If not, you know, then how can I reorient or reallocate my time, my consciousness, my energy, my resources, my money, my friendships, how can I reorient towards things that do? What are the things that I rely or depend upon, number two, that if taken away would make me fall down more than I probably should, right? Like I can tell you back this is a long time ago for me now, in my early 20s, you know, I smoked cigarettes, and I'll never forget when I stopped smoking, how clear it was to me that this was not a good friend, that stripped of the dependence of nicotine, that I felt miserable and horrible. And I thought, that's not the kind of friend I want around. I don't want something in my life that if taken away from me, I can't go on living. And that might seem like, on the one hand, like, oh, well, what about love? Like it would feel terrible to lose a loved one or to lose a child or whatever. And no question that there's some things in life, you know, dependencies that are so deep and profound, and it's really painful to let go of them. There's a difference in the loss of someone or something that we love with a kind of selflessness, you know, a lover, a friend, a child, a companion, and something that if taken away from us, we become morose. We lose purpose. We become self-destructive. We become sick. We become diseased. So really, really good question is, what do I rely on or depend upon that if taken away would make me fall more than I probably should? And then back to question one, does who and what I give my time, energy, and resources to, at least in some amount, contribute to more heart, more soul, more compassion, tolerance, peace, mercy, friendship, beauty, justice, and love? Because good and bad fortune are going to come and go, come and go, come and go. But we also have the eternally renewable resource of all of these virtues that live in the heart. And the attitude that they have is generally less about who or what can I cling on to that only will temporarily prop me up, versus the opposite attitude, which is, how can I cultivate these virtues, and how can I be concerned about and trying to serve other people and understand something about the nature of the world and reality? This is the attitude that ancient sages taught and instructed people to have, specifically so that you can withstand good and bad fortune, Manilius, specifically so that you can understand the nature of good and bad fortune from a holistic perspective, like an astrologer might or a philosopher might, Manilius, so that you can give to people in a way that creates a better world around you, like the Tao Te Ching teaches us, so that if you don't want to go through future moments of total crash and loss of something that you depended upon, that you build up a different kind of resource, just like the Tao Te Ching teaches us that the sage will do, and the sage will inspire in others. Consider number three, if I give more to sources that are good to me, slowly and naturally, unhealthy dependencies will be replaced by healthy ones, and goodness will increase in me and around me in what I support. It's as though we want to create in our lives an environment of good. And I like to say this, you know, like an ecology of goodness around us, not merely a private good, not merely a private insular little space of goodness and happiness, which most of the time will topple over really easily when we're stripped of different kinds of unhealthy dependencies that are just as fleeting as the clouds that pass by every day. So again, why talk about all of this? Because when Venus is the planet of good fortune is in Scorpio, sign of Mars, the planet of bad fortune, and you have both of those, you know, opposing Uranus, a planet that suddenly strips away dependencies. That's often what Uranus does in favor of becoming more independent, or Uranus will disrupt things. So when you have this kind of mixture of good and bad fortune coming suddenly, rapidly, with disruption, with innovation, with a call of some kind to become more healthy or to look for some more a healthier form of an independent form of resource, right? That's the transit that we're working with right now. So if you find that things that you're dependent upon are suddenly being taken away or stripped back or challenged or changed or whatever, consider these lessons, because these, to me, these are the things that, as I was reflecting on Venus Uranus this week, these are the things that I realize every time I take a moment, like every month, for example, you know, we have charities that we support and things that we give a little bit of our monthly income to. That means a lot to me. Every month, I feel like my life has changed so much since taking up that practice, you know, supporting people and things that I care about. And also making sure that every day, you know, it's really hard to get knocked over if our attitude is more about, you know, my job today is to be joyful and to try to find a way to serve other people and to help other people who are struggling out there. And when I do that, I find that the best resources, teachers, people, things come to me to support me too. So anyway, I hope that you find this to be an inspiring way of looking at Venus opposite Uranus. Remember, if you ever have a story this week about Mercury square Pluto or Venus opposite Uranus, use the hashtag grabbed and tell us your story, put in the aspect and then share what's going on. I'd love to hear your Venus opposite Uranus stories this week. I know Venus opposite Uranus can be very quirky and interesting. And also Mercury square Pluto. What are the stories that you're seeing? If you want to write to us instead, you can write to us at grabbed@nightlightastrology.com. Remember, the planets were called grahas or grabbers. We know it's easy to get grabbed by the planets. It's also our mission to learn from them and to grasp what they're teaching us all the time. So at any rate, and don't forget, you can pick up a copy of the Tao Te Ching, the Tartar Cornerstone edition. If you want to get that queued up, because probably in a month or so, I'll be doing a series where we go through the whole Tao Te Ching and really talk about it in light of our astrological studies. So, all right, that's what I've got for today. I hope you guys have a good one and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye.